Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howes, and always I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Understand that anytime I talk about a topic on my blog or on this podcast, it really is applicable to a lot of different areas, such as leadership in general. Sometimes I apply it specifically to pastoral leadership or church leadership. And we're going to go over something about responding to critics, specifically when not to respond to critics today. And there may be times that I refer to pastor roles. There may be times that I talk about, well, this is a certain leadership situation. But when it's all said and done, I think that the four principles that are involved here will apply almost to any leadership position. Now, Jonathan, before I get started on this, I just want to give a little background. It's almost biographical about me and critics. I'm not going to get into specifics. Here,
so you don't have any critics, do you?
Don't have any. Everybody loves me. So I've gone through three phases. The first phase is when I became a pastor of that little church in southern Indiana, the church that I affectionately call the Church of First Merle, mm-hmm. who was the deacon in the church and the adult Sunday school teacher, but there were no children Sunday school teacher because there were no children until our family got there. The median age was 74. So there was no need for a children's ministry. So I go into this church, and no one had prepared me for this. I was still in seminary, but seminary had never prepared me for it. And I thought because I was the pastor and because I'm Tom Rainer,
yeah,
everybody would love me. And guess what?
That didn't happen, did it?
Even though we only had 7 members, didn't add my family of then 4 at the time, we made it 11, church growth, biological church growth. Even though there was only that few of members, it was not a week or two before I got my first criticism.
Really?
I was devastated. Yeah, the kids were playing cards in the pews, Sam and Art, and some about Baptist and cards and while I was preaching. And so, yeah. I'm sure it was Rook or something like that because they were too young at the time.
Go fish.
Yeah, they were
How
too young.
You play cards.
But, you know, they were little kids, and in order to be happy, I guess Nellie Joey giving them a deck of cards and didn't really understand some Baptists and cards. So, anyway, I got my first criticism. And it just devastated me. I thought the world was coming to an end because I've only been in ministry leadership for
a
couple of weeks. And now somebody's telling me what I'm doing wrong. And that was my first phase of leadership, just getting used to the fact, not that you ever get accustomed to criticism, but just getting used to the fact that some people will disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's phase one. Phase two comes along where I think I have to respond to every critic. Everybody that says anything, and this lasted for quite a while. It lasted until my 4th at church,
wow.
where I attempted to try to respond to everybody who criticized me. And I don't want to exaggerate like I was getting inundated with criticism, but any leader in any position over a period of time is going to have a number of critics and a number of criticism. So I went through this phase where I was literally wearing myself out trying to respond to everybody.
Yeah, that sounds exhausting.
It was exhausting. It was especially emotionally exhausting.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife, who's smarter than I am and wiser than I am, just said, well, why don't you just let some of it go? You know, you're not going to satisfy some of these people anyway. So at that point, by the time I got to my 4th church, I realized that I shouldn't respond to everybody. I am now in phase 3. Phase 3 is when you get a critic, try not to take it too personally. I'm still not great at that. I still got a long way to go. I'll probably get it down when I'm dead.
Yeah.
That's probably
That doesn't seem like something that anybody can
overcome. There's some
overcome.
People who say they handle criticisms well. I just handle them moderately well. I certainly got a long way to go. And unlike earlier years, I don't respond to every critic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, I do try to respond to most critics. I think most critics deserve a response. I think most critics have a legitimate gripe or perspective. And I think that some critics are actually going to be right and I'm going to be wrong. So as a result, I do try to respond to most, or at least have someone now in my organization to respond. So I've gone through three phases. One, I can't believe someone's criticizing me. Phase two, I've got to answer every critic. Now I'm at phase three. Try to toughen up a little bit, Rainer, and answer most of them, but you don't need to respond to every one of them. And that leads us to where we are today. When don't you respond?
And the four reasons you listed on a recent blog, we'll go through those today. Number one is when you have already repeatedly responded.
There is a critic, and I'm definitely not going to get into specifics, names, or situation, but we got another letter, email from him today, and it's the same issue. It's the same thing. I've answered this person. I've even met with this person, and yet it is not being resolved. This is one of those situations where I've responded as much as I know how to respond. I have attempted to present my perspective, and I don't say that I'm always right. I'm far from it. But the only way that this is going to get resolution is if I do exactly what he wants me to do, and I am not going to do that. So as a result, this is somebody that has just been a persistent critic. We are not going to deal with this. I remember a story by Brad Wagner, executive vice president of Lifeway. He said that when he was a executive pastor in a church, he had this guy follow him around and would just, in the building, just say one thing after another. And it went on for days and weeks. You need to think about this. And he just literally walked with Brad. So finally, Brad had it. He stopped and he said, he has to admit, he raised his voice and he said to him, "Don't you ever say another word to me. Never, ever, ever." I'm not suggesting we get like that, but at the same time, I am suggesting that there comes a point that you have adequately responded, and then it will be time to just say, "I'm not going to respond anymore."
Well, at some point, it comes to a Romans 12:18 kind of moment where, you know, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with everyone. You can't make them change. You just have to say, "Well, I'm at peace with it. I'm sorry you won't understand or still have this criticism, but, you know, you just got to move on."
At some point, you have to move on. And I would just say to some people out there, if you've had this persistent critic, you've done everything in your power, above all God's power, to respond to this critic, and there's still no resolution, sometimes you just need to move on.
The second reason you listed was when the critic intends harm.
You know, there's a passage in Nehemiah about Sanballat, and Sanballat is asking for a meeting because he has to give Nehemiah some advice. Well, that was not what he intended.
Yeah.
Sanballat intended Nehemiah harm. And I think the text says that four times he requested the meeting, and every time Nehemiah would say, "No, not going to meet with you. You're intending me harm. We've already gone through this. Reason number one that I've responded to you before. Reason number two that you intend me harm." There are some people who they're really not interested in the resolution. They're interested in causing some type of harm to you, professional harm. I don't think it's always physical harm. That would be a rare case, but there are times when it is all said and done that you know that the only thing that will result from that meeting is someone trying to harm you, or from that discussion with someone. So there comes a time when you just stop. Let me give you one of, I hate to be such a good example of being a recipient of criticism, because listeners may think that I get a lot of criticisms. Well, there was someone that wrote me persistently, someone that just kept on communicating with me. And what this person was trying to do was to capture some words that I was saying and then use them out of context. Mm-hmm. That particular critic had a track record for doing that. And so I simply did not respond, because I know that anything I wrote would be put in some other type of context and it would use that in the public somehow to do me harm. So I did not respond.
The third point you made was when the critic will not reason.
There have been some times when I thought, and I do think that this is always better, Jonathan, that when it's all said and done, that you get body language, you hear voice inflection. So what I'm getting at, sometimes it's better to pick up the telephone. We don't use the telephone that much these days. We use electronic media that doesn't always carry our voice or show our face. But if you can get into a telephone conversation, the chances are you will have a better meeting with the critic. If you can have a one-on-one meeting, the chances are you can better deal with the critic. Of course, I don't have the luxury of picking up the phone and calling everybody. I don't have the luxury. I could, but it would be a full-time job. I don't have the luxury, definitely, of meeting with everybody all over the world. Yeah. And those relatively few who might be my critics. But that is always best, that if you can talk it over face to face, if you can talk it over at least over the telephone, then as a result, you will probably deal with the critic a lot better. There are some exceptions to that, though. And again, I'm using my personal reservoir too much here. Had a critic, and we happened to be in the same city at the same time about 5 years ago. It was a single issue, and it was an issue that I knew for the sake of the organization that I could not change. It was an issue that he was very set on. And so we had a face-to-face meeting. We just were able to work it out because we were in the same city. Big mistake. I should have known from the communication he sent me that that meeting would not go well, and it did not go well. He ranted. He screamed at me. Anytime I would try to reason with him, he would just blast me. He was the exception to the rule, but he would not reason with me. And you can tell at some point, I certainly could tell with him in that conversation, yeah, that he was unwilling to reason, and he wanted to rant. And so as a result, I just had to say this meeting was over. Now, I want to be very careful. The listener may perceive that I'm insensitive. The listener may perceive that I don't listen to critics. These are the exceptions. These are the times that you don't respond to critics. And if I had to put down a percentage, and again, it would just be pulling something out of thin air, I'd say it's probably 5% of the mm-hmm. time, a very small amount of time. But when the critic will not reason, when all he does is rant, there was another critic that called my office one time and started screaming at my assistant. I mean, just screaming at the top of his voice. Well, I wasn't going to deal with him because he was already ranting before he even got to me. So there are a few times where the critic will not reason. Most of the time, you are going to want to deal with the critic. You are going to want to try to meet them face to face. But there will be a few times that it just does more harm than good.
The final time that you listed of when not to respond to critics is when the criticism becomes an ad hominem attack.
Ad hominem means against the person. As you well know, let's go to my blog post for just a moment. Let's go to the blog. I have a general policy, you and I do, mm-hmm. that most comments are approved.
They are?
Most of them, if they're critical of me, you are approved.
Yeah, you approve more than I would if it was my blog. Just put it that way.
I do approve them because I want to have a very open comment stream. I don't want anybody to think there's any type of censorship taking place here. There are a few occasions where you or I will not allow a post, a comment, I should say, to be approved. One of those is if they make a personal attack on someone. Just happened yesterday. I was looking at the comments that were coming in, and someone attacked a Christian leader in that comment.
Yeah.
They went after him. They went after his ministry. And as a result, I am not going to approve that. That's an ad hominem attack. It's against the person. You know, about the only time I make an exception to that is those that are against me. And there are times when someone attacks me, and I'll say, okay, I'm gonna put it out there, and I'm going to respond to you. Maybe I shouldn't, but I definitely will not respond to anyone, or at least will not approve a comment if there's an attack against the person. You can deal with the issue. Don't deal with the person on a personal basis.
And I know you don't want your blog to be a place where people come and trash on other Christian leaders.
I have tried my best to let the blog become a place where you can disagree, but you can disagree in a Christian spirit.
Yeah.
This is not about disagreeing. This is about unreasonable critics. This is about people who only want to rant, only want to hurt. This is not about people who have a different viewpoint than you do. These are people that will not be reasoned with in any way. And so, yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm talking about it in this podcast is that on the blog, we want to have a spirit that it's a Christian spirit. That doesn't mean we don't disagree, but it means that we disagree in an agreeable fashion. So as a result, I'm going to allow most of the comments to come through. And as a result, I'm going to respond to most critics. But if anybody ever attacks a person, if anybody at any time begins to say something against their character, I'm going to cut it off right then.
Now, two follow-up questions that I have on this is, one, is there ever a time whenever it is an automatic disqualification for you to respond? I mean, is there a type of criticism or something that it doesn't matter what it is, you will not respond, period?
Well, I won't respond if they say anything about my family, automatically. I don't know why they would, but on rare occasions it has happened. And on those times, I'm just simply not going to do it, because this isn't about anybody in my family, it's about me.
Yeah.
And so as a result, I will not. And almost to the same degree, as I just said earlier, if they have a personal attack against some type of other Christian, I am not going to respond as well.
What about anonymous criticism? That was a big debate in the comment section on this post.
I don't respond to anonymity because that person is unwilling to put his or her name. Now, if they say in there, "Tom, I'm going to make this comment. I really don't want my name posted, but here's my name," I will honor that.
Yeah.
Because at least they're not hiding behind a veil that says I'm unwilling to show my name.
Rainer Hater 2008 or something.
That many?
No, I mean, it's like a year.
Oh,
I was just
okay.
Coming up, you
I
know,
thought,
with a,
I thought
a
you
fake
were,
username. Or
I
something.
Thought you had counted that many, and I was about to really get depressed.
No, I'm higher than that, I think.
Okay. But yeah, those that are in anonymity. Of course, if you get a letter that's in anonymity, you can't respond to it. Sometimes if you get it, you know, it's funny. Sometimes we get emails that are anonymous, and yet we know exactly who it is.
They think it's anonymous.
They think it's anonymous. We can trace you out there.
Yeah. that's what I'm here for. All right. The final question I have for you is, how do you make that decision? I mean, the decision to respond or not. I mean, you list these four. But sometimes there's gray area, sometimes there's, you know, there's nuance involved, there's other relationships involved. What is your decision-making process on yes, I should, or no, I shouldn't?
First of all, I do it categorically in my mind. The first category is the organization. In my case, it would be Lifeway. In a pastor's case, it would be the church. So the first thing I ask is, does not responding hurt the organization? Does not responding hurt something about Lifeway, or if you're a pastor, something about the church? If I do not respond, is there going to be something that there will be further repercussions out? And so I ask that question first of all. So I have it categorically in my mind, but otherwise I go back to these four issues. But there are times when I say, if I don't respond to this, even if it's one of these four, it might not be good for the organization. The second category is not organizational, but it's personal. I am more likely to respond to a critic who comes against me personally, not ad hominem enough, but something about something I believe, something about something I've said, something that I've written, I am more likely to respond to them, because I believe if I'm representing myself personally, I am not as concerned about the repercussions than if I were doing the whole organization.
Now, how does this change as you, Tom Rainer, the pastor, and Tom Rainer, the business leader?
Well, the pastor has to be the under-shepherd. And so many times when you have someone who criticizes you within your own church, that person is hurting himself or herself. And there have been times as a pastor when somebody has just blasted me in the past, and I've turned around and I've said, look, let's talk about it. And they come into the office, and I'll make up this name, and I'll say, John, is there something bothering you? This doesn't sound like you. You know, why the venom? Why the attack? And it is not uncommon that as a result, they start weeping, they may break down, or they may just shake their head and say, yeah, I have a greater problem. As a pastor, we have the opportunity to get to the heart of the issue, and sometimes we can handle it pastorally. But keep in mind, churches have well-intentioned dragons, just like any other organization, but some of them are not so well-intentioned. So you go back to these four reasons, and when it's all said and done, you have to say, maybe I don't respond to this one anymore.
In what ways would you caution against possible passive-aggressive responses, where you're not responding, but you are?
Well, that would be where it'd be very clear that's something a pastor or other church leader does not do. If you're going to respond to a criticism in any way, you need to be direct with the critic. You don't need to preach it in your sermon. You don't need to say some people say or this particular issue arose, or you don't need to write it in your newsletter, on your blog, or anything like that. You need to deal with it head on. Otherwise, I would caution against any type of mention of it in any other form.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Pastors Today. This weekly newsletter and website provides pastors with resources and information from around the web, written specifically for pastors. For more information and to subscribe, visit lifeway.com/pastors. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Well, this has been about responding to critics in general or when not to respond to critics, but I simply want to mention that we will be expanding through my office the role of what we're doing to connect with pastors and other staff, and hopefully in the near future we'll be able to make some pretty exciting announcements about how we can connect better with pastors and other staff, and we can help them deal with these issues even more so one-on-one.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.